The T Nation, thanks for tuning in to part two of this week's show featuring PGA Tour caddy and one of the most decorated players in the history of the state of Tennessee, and that is Kip Henley. Plus one of Golf Digest's best young teachers in America and one of the best U.S. kids coaches anywhere on the planet, and that's Eva Rogers. So sit back, relax, we're going to have a great time here over the next hour. Enjoy the show. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2, UNDR.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
Okay, now back in making his fifth appearance with me here on the show is PGA Tour caddy Kip Henley. Let me remind you about Kip's background, and not only as a great caddy, but he is very undersold for the great player that he's been in and around the city of Chattanooga and the state of Tennessee. He's actually one of the most decorated players in the history of the state of Tennessee. He was a Chattanooga City Prep Champion and winner of the Ewing Watkins Award for being an outstanding junior golfer in the city. He played his college golf at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, where he lettered every year from 1979 to 1982. In the 81-82 season, Kip played in four tournaments. In those tournaments, he had a top five, a top 10, finished second on the team with a scoring average of 76.10, and that top five was in the Southern Conference Championship. In 82, Kip was named All-Southern Conference, and that season he also had a top 20 finish at the Marshall Invitational. Kip has been a PGA Class A professional since 1988. He played out on the Hooters NGA Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour, and a few times out on the PGA Tour. He won the Tennessee Assistant Pro Championship, the Tennessee Section Championship four times, the Tennessee State Open twice, once as an amateur in 1982 and again as a professional 15 years later in 1997. He's been named Tennessee Player of the Year five times. He won the Golf Channel's Big Break 2 in 2004. He had back-to-back top 20s in the Tennessee Senior State Open in 2017 and 2018. Then last June, he drained a 20-footer from the fringe on the last hole to win the Tennessee Senior Open Championship. He's been a caddy on the PGA Tour for great players like Jason Bond, Garrett Willis, Stuart Sink, Vijay Singh, Austin Cook, Brian Gay, Boo Weekly, I could go on and on. In 2014, the Chattanooga newspaper, the Chattanoogan, ranked Kip the eighth best golfer of all time from the city. In 2017, they inducted him into the Chattanooga Sports Hall of Fame, and he should be in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. I can't imagine what's keeping him out of that thing. And I couldn't be more honored. He is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Kipper, how are you, my friend?
What's up, my little buddy? How are you, man?
I'm fantastic. You?
I'm all right. Yeah. Boy, I got to get you to leave that college career off my superlatives or whatever you call them. Good God, is that a terrible career in college? I was so thinking bad, man.
Look, if guys are out there finishing, you know, in the top three, top five, top 10 in their college career, I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of.
It wasn't very illustrious. I didn't realize how poor it was until you found out all those stats.
All right, so let's put that aside. Let's go back to last June when you won the Tennessee State Senior Open. You were a rare amateur to win that tournament. You were tied for second going into the last round. You're tied for the lead going to the last hole, and then you drain a winning putt from about 15 feet from just off the green. Tell us about that win.
Well, first off, it's a huge upset for me to hang in there and beat those guys. You know, the amateurs, I wasn't playing a whole lot of golf at the time. I was still caddying full time and had a week off and went up and played, found something that kind of clicked in the practice round and it worked for two more days. But for me to beat those amateurs in Tennessee golf, they're good as golf professionals. I mean, these guys they're rich, they're retired, they take lessons, they play at Oakmont, they play at Seminole, they play everywhere in all these tournaments, they travel around. They're hard to beat, but I had a little bit of an advantage there because it's my old stomping grounds where I was a club professional for 100 years. And I wasn't actually the club pro at Stonehenge, but it's one of four courses in Fairfield Glade. And I was the pro at Heatherhurst and did most of my golfing at Stonehenge because it was the least busy and the best track up there. So I played it a million times. So I kind of have a leg up on the boys, and they still have it there every year. So, I mean, who knows? But if I can say a real important thing, if anybody ever watched that video, I kind of act like an idiot, but I've never acted like that after a win. You know, I usually try and stay a little bit more humble than that, but that was a special thing. Besides winning in the Glade and my friends watching me hoop that putt on 18, the year before, last year, well, I guess it'll be 2 years ago now, but about 6 months prior to that event, we lost the fellow who gave me my first assistant pro job at Dorchester, one of the other four golf courses in the Glade, Warren Huddleston, the big guy, we called him, the big guy. And he was in my wedding. He's a dear friend for life. And he passed away suddenly with a heart attack like 6 months before that tournament. And it just broke the community's heart and all our hearts. He was such a special man. But so I get up near around the lead after the first round, and his wife, you know, that's still alive, he reaches out to me that night in a text, and she said, "Kip, big guy would be so proud of where you're at." And I said, "Oh my gosh," you know, and so it kind of took some of the importance of the game away from me a little bit. And I said, "You know what, Miss Ron, I'm going to go play good for the big guy tomorrow. You know, I'm going to try my best." And I mean, I was puking coming. I found out, you know, you could watch the scoreboards on your phone. I saw that I had a 2-shot lead with two holes to go. I wasn't looking at the scoreboard a lot, but. And I 3-putted. No, I had a 1-shot lead. I had a 1-shot lead with two holes to go. I was 3-under, and it was two guys in the barn at 2-under, and there's a guy playing with me that was 2-under. And I 3-putted 17, just puked all over myself. I had like a 4-footer going straight up the hill for my par, and I yacked it up there hole high and tapped it in for a bogey. So now tied standing on 18-tee. And 18 is a bugger at Stony. It's just a hard hole. Big lake in front, back right pin. And I sat there in that cart. We had a little bit of weight. And I said, "You know what? I am not going to throw this away. And I am not going to let these guys get me in a playoff." I said, "I'm going to win this golf tournament." I tell myself, "I'm winning this golf tournament right here." And I hit a pure shot off the tee right down in front of the water. And I nailed an 8-iron as flush as it could be. And I mean, it could have got kicked close, but it kind of skipped into the back fringe. And like you said, I had about a 15, 20 footer with about 2.5 feet of break in it. And I looked up behind the green. All my friends were standing up there, and a lot of the guys watching, trying to see how they're going to finish. And one of my old assistant pros, it's Jeff Houston, who's now the director of golf up there, who big, you know, was a dear friends of the big guy as well. And I looked up at him, and I said, "Let's make one for the big guy, Jeff." And I turn around, and a couple seconds later, I hit that putt. And I thought I'd hit it high, and I swear at the last second, I mean, big guy yanked that thing down the hill. I thought I hit too much break. And it yanked it down the hill, and it just peeled right in that right edge. And that when I scream up and I hold my hand up into the air, I yell, "Big guy!" There people thought I was talking about God. And, you know, I acknowledge God, but that was for the big guy in heaven. And that's why I acted like an idiot. Threw my hat and let out a big old whoop, whoop, and whatever I did. And then I had to apologize to the boys. So that was one of my most special, if not it was one of the most special wins I ever had in my career.
Why'd you
have to apologize? That's a long story.
That's a great story. Why'd you have to apologize? You shouldn't have to apologize to anybody for that.
Well, one thing, the guy I was paired with, he's 2-under, so he's tied for second. He had like an 8-footer to go yet. He still had work to do. And I like an idiot, you know, and I throw my hat. And then I said, "Oh, my God, guys, I'm sorry. I knocked those in," you know, and he did. And he finished one of the three guys. So I ended up beating him by a shot. And we call him Little Gibby. It's Gibby Gilbert, you know, not the tour player's son. And Little Gibby, he plays a lot of senior tour events and had Corn Ferry status a lot in his career, but he was one of the guys that was in there at 200, and I sure didn't want to go in no playoff with that cat because he's way better at the game than me. I got lucky, and he played poorly on the first round, and then he won the medal on the second round, and he was one of the guys that finished tied for second with the other two golf professionals. So,
Kip, I've been campaigning for years now since I first got to know you about getting you into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. I mean, look, if it's just the things that you have won in some of the major tournaments in and around the city of Chattanooga and around the state of Tennessee, I mean, going back to a prep championship, All Southern Conference, Tennessee Assistant Pro Championship, Tennessee Section Champion four times, two Tennessee State Opens, a Senior Open Championship now, and being named Player of the Year five times. I mean, I can't imagine there are many more decorated golfers that have ever come out of the state of Tennessee. Shouldn't you be Hall worthy at this point?
Tell what, I hate to say that, you know, I deserve it. I'm not saying that, but boy, there's not many left out there with better careers than mine that aren't in it. But you know, I left Tennessee golf in like 2004 or five, you know, and I gave up my Class A and I reverted back to amateur standing. So, you know, I kind of chased my dream, and I turned pro, you know, I tried tour school all those years. I don't know. I mean, really and truly, I don't see how they can keep me out. If they keep me out, then it's going to be hard, because it's hard to win now. You know, there's so many more good players, you know, than even in my day. There's so many more good players now that will just beat your brains in. It's hard to rack up as many wins as I had. You can do it if you're dominant, but it's hard to be dominant in Tennessee golf, man. There's so many cats here to play. I had a guy on Twitter tell me if I was in Florida, I wouldn't have half those titles. I went, you jerk, you.
Right?
I said, what if I was practicing all winter instead of wearing toboggans and two sweaters trying to hit balls? I said, maybe I would have been even better. So, and I said, winners win. So, who knows? But he's kind of mean to me. But he might be correct.
Wow. I mean, that's just some guy that's just trying to poo-poo on somebody, you know, that's won. It's just, you know, I hate when people try to throw a negative on top of somebody that has done something that's extraordinary. And your Tennessee career has been extraordinary. And him trying to throw shade on it just because, oh, well, you couldn't do that in Tennessee or, you know, California, whatever. Shut up.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows the other side of the story? It's like caddying. When you talk your guy into an 8-iron, you know that he hits on the front of the green and he didn't hit a 7-iron over. But the 8-iron don't get back to the pin, but it didn't go over the green. And you talk him into hitting 8, and it goes to the front of the green. And you don't get to hear the other side. You don't get to know the other side of the story, you know.
Right.
Well, he hits a 7-iron over and he's dead or whatever, you know. So you live with what you do, you know, and try your best. I tried, man. I tried with both hands for many years, you know. I really, even though, you know, a lot of people look at my career as very decorated, and I'm proud of it, you know, looking back, I'm proud. But, man, I still see myself as a failure because I had the one, I've told you this before, I had the one mission. I was going to be a PGA Tour player. You know, I didn't study in college because I knew I'd have four or five green jackets in my closet someday. So I had one mission in the game of golf, and it's to become a tour player. And I got to play in a handful of tour events and stuff, but I look at my career as a failure, a little bit of a failure. Now, I'm proud as I can be of the things I've done, but still that thing is stuck in there like, dang it, man, just didn't get it done.
Well, I mean, let's take that a step further. I mean, I get it. You had aspirations, you had dreams and all that sort of stuff. But again, a resume like this, the guys that you've been on the bag for, and the championships that you've won, you're in a Hall of Fame there in the city of Chattanooga. It may not have been the four or five green jackets that you had, but do you feel like, I don't know. I mean, I hate to hear that, Kip, because I just think you're one of the all-time greats. I mean, look, are you the 0.1%, the guys that won, you know, multiple majors? No. But are you like the 1% of guys that got to that level? Yes.
Right. You know, and when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God that question. He might say, Kip, I wanted you to touch this man. and I wanted you to touch this guy's life, and I wanted you to help that kid that got a scholarship. You know, I wanted you to be a club pro. So you gave all those golf lessons. Who knows the other side of the story? But I shouldn't say I'm ashamed. I'm not ashamed. I'm proud of what I've done, big time. But there's still a little stuck in my crawl. And I'm going to ask God, why didn't I make it, man? What did I do wrong? What was the hole I stepped in? And you know what? The thing about that, Chris, the hole I stepped in, you know, that's part of me being, I think I'm a pretty solid caddy. You know, I'm probably a better caddy than I was a player because I stepped in a bunch of holes, you know, trying to get out there on the PGA Tour, you know, and I switched drivers right on this day, or I continually switched putters, or I didn't work out enough, or I didn't eat right, you know. Or maybe I switched teachers, or maybe I kept, you know, and I feel like I can really help a guy. I offer a lot in the game. You know, I was a teacher and a club pro and a player. You know, I heard Mr. Ranker, goodness gracious, what a decorated cat he is. What an honor it'd be to get a lesson from that cat, because he's teaching now. So he knows, you know, just because you're a tour player, that don't mean you're a good teacher. Trust me. I don't care how much you know about the golf swing. There's a crap ton of PGA Tour players that are so knowledgeable about the golf swing, but you got to put in the hours on that range, man. You cannot be what I call a classroom teacher. You know, these guys that are book smart and understand the physics and all the P5 and the P3 and all that. It's great to have that knowledge, but sticking it on the lesson tee and knowing where you're going. And if I tell this guy to do this, you know, if I tell him to take playing with a cupped left wrist to a flat left wrist, or a flat left wrist to an arched left wrist at the top, I'm going to send him into a tailspin for months. He's not going to just take and start playing. If he's a good player, he's not going to play good golf for a while. And you got to have that, you know. And a lot of these classroom cats that know everything about the physics of the game and all this stuff, and they're brilliant. I'm not taking away from them. But if you haven't sat on that lesson tee and sweated your tail off and give hundreds and hundreds of golf lessons and know how to stick these things in, when to stick them in, especially if you're coaching a good player, a solid player. What can you do can I give this guy a Band-Aid today? Or is this something we got to step back? We got to step back for 2 weeks, you know? Just put in the balls, put in the, you know, the hit this many hundred balls, and this grip change will be okay. Trust me on this. We're going to step one step back, but we're going two or three forward with this hard change we're going to make. Or we're going to say, hey, you know, just feel this on the way down before he tees off in the golf tournament if he's struggling. Just feel this. You know, don't give him a whole lot of – so application is monster big. And like Larry, you know, I said about Larry, the guy played it. He's had all the best teachers, and he's had to use it. And now he's put in the sweat, too, out there. So you can't go for a better golf lesson than a cat like that right there. And I feel like I offer a – you know, I wasn't the player he was, but – I feel like I know I've put in the sweat out on that range. So
let's take that
for a lot.
Yeah. So to that point, Kip, you have a complete resume in the game of golf, from being a teaching professional for a while to a guy that played at a very high level, and you did get to play in some PGA Tour events, to a guy that's been on the bag for a lot of really great players over the course of your career. So you've got a lot of perspective that most people don't. Taking all of that together as a complete package for somebody, to me, you're the perfect guy that anybody would want to come see to talk about the game of golf, to learn about the game of golf, or to come see you if I've been a player for a while and I've started to go sideways a little bit, because you do bring so much to the table.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. It means a lot. But I'm getting up in there, and, you know, and I'm long in the tooth now, and that phone, you know, I'm in between bags on the PGA Tour right now, and praying that phone rings pretty soon. But I'm kind of in a crossroads, you know, in my career. If no one wants the old guy anymore, then, you know, I need to find other avenues to help pay the bills. And I've thought long and hard about teaching. You know, I've thought about doing a 2-day school and bringing in, you know, junior high and high school kids. And it's like, let them stay for 2 days, and we go over every facet of the game, from the mental thing to reading how to read a yardage book properly. You know, even a little bit on the rules and definitely application. Here's how you this is how you impress college coaches right here. You don't just go out and whack balls you have a system, and you let him see you doing these drills, and you have a thing, and you have a pre-shot routine, nice and fast and consistent, and you're a professional out there, you know? I feel like I may be going in that direction if that phone don't ring, but I love caddying with all my heart. I so love my job, and I'm not willing to give it up yet. My little brother, you know, he got a great career caddying, 20 great years of caddying. And he said, "Kip, I think it's the over." And I said, "No, it's not, Brent. I'm going to get back on a stud here, and I'm going to help that cat get to the top, you know, so I'm not going to give up. So we'll see where it turns." But I am actually staring at a fork in the road right now, bud. So
let's a couple more before I let you go. And I want to talk about both of those things, because we're on the heels of this year's RBC Heritage Tournament just this past weekend in Harbortown, where Scotty kept it rolling, winning, you know, the Masters, and then obviously Harbortown right after that. You were on the bag with Brian Gay when he won there in 2009. And not only did he won by 10 strokes. So you got him through a tournament that he practically lapped the field there. Talk about that.
Well, the first thing I remember about that is he hated Harbortown. You know, when I first started leaving, he said, "Man, I never did good there." I said, "Good God, BG." I said, "Jack Nicklaus and Pete Dye built that place for you, man." I said, we have to go. He wanted to even pass on it for a year or two. And I talked him into going. Of course, I wanted him to go kind of a little bit for selfish reasons, because my little brother, Brent, again, he was the assistant pro there for John Farrell for like 3 years before he started caddying and moved back to Chattanooga. So I'd played there a bunch of times, and it was dear to my heart, and I love the area. But I pretty much taught BG, and I said, "We are going to Harbortown, bud." And I don't know that we won it the first year. I don't think we won it. It wasn't long. It was either the second time we played in it or the first one. I think it was probably the second time. But to get that, you said I got him around. That guy is one of the greatest players to ever play the game, one of the greatest short game, one of the straightest hitters, and one of the best wedges and pitches and putters or whoever took in the air. So, I mean, maybe I had a tiny, tiny bit to, you know, maybe it only won by 9 without me, but who knows?
But you got him to go. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You got him to go there and play the golf tournament. It wasn't for you, he may have never played there.
You're right. He might not have even gone back. But I said it. You know, there's only been 5 guys in the last, like, 45 years now that have won by double digits. And, you know, Tiger did it a few times. But there's not but 5 guys, I think, what it is. And little bitty old Brian Gay is one of them. So I'm kind of proud of that. Then he won Memphis. A month and a half later, he won that by 5. So I had a tiger by the tail there for a while with old Brian Gay. And, boy, I didn't realize how good I had it when I had him, man. He was an easy cat to work for. But, you know, I've had a lot of good bags over the years. And I'm going to get me another good one here just soon. You watch.
I know it. I hope so. All right, one more. And you talked about this, about some guys that are, you know, book smart and know all the physics and that sort of thing. And then you mentioned the word application, because one of the great things that I think you can bring to any player at any level is being out on the golf course and be able to apply the things that they know how to do mechanically with what you know about what needs to happen in a given moment in a golf tournament. Because there's a whole difference between hitting really good shots out on the driving range and hitting good shots when you're playing with your buddies at your country club. And it's a whole different thing when you're out on tour. So being able to apply, like, what do I need to do when it's the 71st hole and I have a 1-stroke lead going into the final 2 holes? How do I need to play this? How do I need to handle a certain situation? And those are the things that you can bring to somebody. Talk about that.
Well, I think a good caddy, you know, he makes his player confident. And caddying, I've always said caddying is psychology way before it is anything else. And talking fast, you know, to where your mind needs to be way out front of the words that are coming out of your mouth. You've got to be able to think fast on your toes and say the right things. You know, when that guy's standing there on 72nd hole with a 1-shot lead, water down the left and out of bounds down the right, what does he want to have come out of your mouth? You know, what am I going to say to this guy? How am I going to present this when he asks me? Or, you know, how am I going to keep his confidence level as high as it could be? You know, I always like to say, I want a guy working for me that knows what it's like to play when your hand's shaking and your heart's pounding through your chest and you find a way to get it done. And I've learned through all my years of planning, you know, I played in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of golf tournaments. And, you know, I've found a way to win. And like it, me winning that Senior State Open this year, it proved to me, beating these cats that play golf all the time, it proved to me that my winning thoughts coming down the stretch and how to get it done when you, you know, when you're nervous, it works. And it's the same mental process it takes to win the Masters. I'm sure it is. It's the same mental process it takes to win Hilton Head. So, you know, it's a different level, but it's the process does not change. The thoughts that go through your head and how to apply them do not change. Same thing. And I feel like I can help cats win golf terms. I've been lucky. So.
Kipper, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things that you're out there doing and whatever road you decide to go down? How can we stay up with that, whether it's following you online or it's on social media?
I'm pretty much my dominant Twitter. You know, I have, I think, almost 50,000 followers on Twitter, and it's my outlet. You know, I've used it as a way to interact on the road. And when I'm sitting in the hotels, you know, for months at a time by myself, you know, it kind of gives me an outlet to interact. And I think a few of the tour players would be afraid of me with my Twitter game. But I've always said, if anybody ever wanted me to cut it off, you know, keep my job or to have a job, I'd cut it off in 2 seconds. My job's the most important thing. But a lot of great things have come to me from Twitter, and a lot of great friends have come to me from Twitter. So many great friends have come to me off of Twitter, and I enjoy it. That's just Kip Henley on Twitter. So I don't know how to tell you to find it, but it's just Kip Henley. You can find it. Just look up Old Fat Caddy or something. You can find me.
Kip, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. It's always so much fun when you're a part of the show. You're fantastic, my friend, and just, I think, undersold as a great player. And if the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame doesn't hurry up and get you in there, I think it's a travesty. I think you should have already been.
I'll send you that number, little buddy. You call. I'm kidding. always an honor to be on your show, dude. You're always the most prepared cat that's ever had me on any golf show. I'm like, you find these stats, and I didn't know I was so bad at these things, but I'm kidding. You're always prepared. You have good questions. It's an honor to be on here with you, little buddy.
I appreciate you, Kip. All the best to you and your family, my friend. I hope we get the privilege of catching up with you again soon.
Back at you. Peace and love.
All right. Right back at you. See you, Kip.
Bye-bye.
That is the great Kip Henley, folks. And they just don't come better. I love that guy. He is very undersold, underappreciated, however you want to look at it, as a player. He's a fantastic caddy. He's been on some of the great bags. And in the history of the game, he was on VJ's bag at the Masters, for crying out loud. He's been, you know, with Boo Weekly, and we mentioned Brian Gay and Stuart Sink and Grayson Murray and the guys that need a really quality caddy. I hope guys are listening, playing out on whether it's the Korn Ferry, the PGA, or the Champions Tour. You need to go get yourself Kip Henley. The guy's going to make you infinitely better out there, and you're going to have a lot more fun. Oh, by the way, playing your rounds of golf when Kip is carrying the bag for you. But the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame absolutely needs to get this guy in their hall. He has definitely earned it. Okay, coming up next is going to be one of Golf Digest's best young teachers in America and one of the best U.S. kids coaches as well, and that is Eva Rogers. Before I get to Eva, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's SQAIRZ.com.
Frustrated with your golf game? Imagine playing with total confidence. Join me, LPGA Pro and Golf Mindset Expert, Debbie O'Connell, for my Conquer Your Golf Mind Challenge. Bill cut 6 strokes, and Lori is club champion. What's your goal? Click the link or text NEXT to 727-339-0106. Use code NEXT for $20 off. Your tee time for transformation is now. Will you take the shot?
Now back with me is Eva Rogers. Let me remind you a little bit about Eva's background. She's from Rockledge, Florida, which is over near Merritt Island and Cocoa Beach over on the East Coast. She played her college golf at West Texas A&M, where in 2010 she finished 9th in the NCAA Division II West Regional. She also finished tied for 24th at the Lone Star Conference Championship, and she was named to the National Golf Coaches Association Division II All-American Scholar Team. She earned her MBA in marketing management. She spent time as an assistant golf professional at PGA National in West Palm Beach. She moved from there to being an assistant at Lake Nona Golf and Country Club just outside of Orlando. She's currently a Class A teaching professional at one of the most historic courses in our country, Medina Country Club. She's a certified U.S. Kids golf coach. Golf Digest named her one of the best young teachers in America, and I couldn't be more honored. She is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Eva, thanks for coming back on the show.
How are you, Chris? I'm doing well.
That's good news. Eva, I got to ask you, are you back up at Medina now? Are you still down at Gray Oaks Country Club there in Naples?
Yeah, no, I'm back at Medina. I was a guest instructor at Gray Oaks for 2 months, for January and February.
Nice. Medina is obviously one of the most historic courses in our country. What's it like for you being up there and you know, at a place that's hosted 3 U.S. Opens, 2 PGA Championships, a U.S. Senior, and a Ryder Cup? That's got to be a fantastic place to be.
Oh, yeah. I always appreciate my drive through the gates and riding and seeing the course and then seeing the historic clubhouse. It's truly a blessing to be there, and the membership is fantastic. So I've taken to it, which is why I'm still here, and I've enjoyed the experience and the growth I've been able to have there.
Eva, you were recently selected to serve on the 2024-2025 PGA lead team. Talk about what that is.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for young professionals to step up in the roles and become a leader, help the next generation of golf professionals, and how we can help the PGA of America with kind of our background and feedback. And they train us in, we have monthly meetings and projects, and our whole goal is to really become the best leader we can be for the future of PGA of America. And a lot of us are wanting to serve on any type of section boards or even for a board on PGA of America. So it's a fantastic opportunity for us to really learn the ins and outs and what it takes to step up in those leadership roles.
You've had a lot of fantastic accolades come your way over the last few years. What's it like for you when Golf Digest comes out and names you one of the best young teachers in America?
Like I said, I'm very blessed. I mean, I am so glad that I have the opportunity to teach and coach as many people and have the positive results that I'm having with them. I mean, it's sometimes people are always like, oh, you were in the magazines. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, I'm just a normal person, you know, just I love my job. And it's just truly, you know, and it's an honor to be a part of this group of people, especially young individuals that are really stepping up and becoming phenomenal instructors and really setting a precedent. And, you know, it's a great team. You know, I know a lot of those professionals, and we all collaborate and we all try to reach out to each other and figure out what's happening, what's trending. And it's just about innovation and really how we can be better.
You are a fantastic coach for junior golf. I mean, I look at all of the Instagram posts and things of that nature, and the kids gravitate to you, seem to really enjoy being around you and learning the game of golf from you. As you watch these young junior players progress in their games, that's got to be incredibly fulfilling to watch them get better and better and perform better in junior tournaments or AJGA or just see them score better, whether they're playing in tournaments or not. What's it like for you as you watch these kids grow in their game?
You know, I don't have kids of my own, but when I watch them, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's happening so fast. And you really take in these moments and watching them, you know, on their ups and downs of, you know, good rounds and bad rounds, and helping them not only mentally prepare themselves for the future and what golf really is and what it takes, but the physical aspects of it, right? So these kids are growing and their feels are like, it's kind of a roller coaster, and you have to make sure that they trust you and the advice that you're giving them and the direction that you're going. And when those kids jump on board, I mean, you just watch them thrive. You just see everything blossom in front of them. It's more of convincing the kids, hey, this is what it is. This is what it takes. You know, you're still a child, but when you start to learn this and learn that, this is where those results come into play. And when you watch them take to that and see the successes happen in front of them, and even those who actually accept the failures as learning experiences, they're not only growing as phenomenal golfers, but phenomenal humans. And you can tell that by just their demeanor and how they talk to you and respect everyone around them. And that's just a fantastic place for me to be in, to see this and have that opportunity to be a part of their lives.
That's awesome. Even nowadays, we live in a video game TikTok world where kids have everything they want right in front of them. It's instant gratification. How do you help them develop a love for the game and not get tired of playing when success doesn't come instantly?
Yeah, that's it's tough sometimes because there are some kids that you just can't get them out of that mentality. However, I try everything that I do. So what I try and do is ask questions. What do they like? I mean, I know I'm not anything that can get them excited where I know, wow, I can use this as leverage. And so what I'll do is I have a lot of dollar bills in some of my clinics, and I'll do a lot of competitions with the kids, and I'll give them, you know, here's a dollar. And it starts to add up. Or I'll like have like really good treats or gear or something that's there. And I do competitions. And what happens is they become addicted to those competitions. And it's either team competitions or it could be a group competition against me. And they want to do that all the time. So what happens is you think, oh man, this kid may be out of it. And you get them in and you find out that they love competing. And so you get them going with the competition. You kind of build up their momentum and confidence. And then you run with it as much as you can. And you keep letting that kid thrive. And yes, you know, I got to throw out those dollars to the kids that win, but they love the competition. And I think practices become boring, but when you make it where there's an end goal in mind, and it doesn't have to be something that's, you know, a 3-month goal or a 6-month goal, but just for that hour long, like, what is your goal? You know, we, like you said, we're in this like instant gratification. But if we can get them to stick to a small goal with a small time frame and they can complete it, it changes their mindset. You know, now they're like, oh, I can do this. And it's easy, right? It's just, it could just be a specific type of putt or whatnot. But I do bribe them a little bit. So it helps, but they love it and they love the competition. And that's the most important part, because at the end of the day, some of these players, you know, some of these juniors are going to turn into really good players, and they're going to turn into high school players, and they're probably going to turn into college players, and some are going to want to try to make it on tour. And the more you get them into a competitive mindset at a young age where they can accept winning and losing, that's part of that growth and development, and hopefully keeping them intact into wanting to continue to play.
Is it more challenging to teach the kids or dealing with us as parents for the expectation levels we have for our kids?
I am very, very, very fortunate at Medina. I have phenomenal parents. They really trust me with what I'm doing and the work I'm doing with the kids. So, you know, everyone always asks me, they're like, oh, I bet the parents are, I'm like, no, I actually never have problems with parents. I'm very, very lucky with that. I would say, I think when I make it clear to the parent, instead of beating around the bush, I'm like, look, your child is a child. Their developmental phases are nothing like ours. Like, we're not going to comprehend something the same way they are. Like, their movement patterns are not the same way they are. They are not as strong as us. Your child is not going to be able to hit the ball 250 yards at 10 years old, you know, weighing 90 pounds. You know, when you start to put the facts in front of them, they kind of back off. They're like, oh, shoot, you know, like, you're right. So that's what, you know, I'll definitely encourage that. Like, if there's any, you know, parents that are really like pushing stuff, look, you state the facts. And if the parents don't agree with it, you know, they can find somebody else. But I think that's the most important part, is training the parents on understanding that your child is really still a child, and we're all about growing the game. Well, if we push them out of it, they're not, they may not come back until an adult, right, if they decide to.
Last March, during Women's History Month, you got a call from the assistant to Illinois House Representative Jennifer Sanellitro in recognition of your success in a male-dominated industry. Talk about what that call was like.
I was speechless. I was very honored for that phone call. You know, like anything, we have about 30,000 PGA members right now, and we have very little women in this industry now. And I think when I received that phone call, it was really touching, but it also solidified my push and drive to go and beat through any barriers that are in my way. And I think that's, you know, I'm trying to mentor more women in this industry and help guide them through any type of obstacles, just like anything, any type of workplaces. You're going to have obstacles, but I think I was never going to let a male-dominated industry take away what I knew I had a gift to do. The question was, is how I was going to maneuver it. And what I did was I just ran with my skill, facts, stats, everything started showing up, and I was gaining respect. And I told myself, don't back down no matter what obstacles come into your way. So I never did. And thank goodness my mom loves getting my phone calls of venting, but she, you know, is like, Eva, understand the industry that you're in, and you're still in it. You haven't quit. So there's a lot of people that will quit because of that struggle. But I'm telling you, I just was a go-getter. And when I received that phone call for it, it just really solidified, you know, my strength. I was like, oh, I'm doing this. And I'm not going to let anybody hold me back from this. So it was a phenomenal phone call. It was wonderful meeting her. And, you know, I'm very blessed that, you know, I've been given this gift to really run with, and also the strength to be able to get through the things that I've, you know, you have to go through in an industry, you know, that, you know, we don't have a lot of women. So you do have to make sure that you can handle, you know, how men are. And it's not, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but, you know, women see things one way, men see things another way. So it's the question is how do you become unison with your team? And that's the most important, is how you guys work together. And I figured out how to work with my team, and it's been phenomenal.
So I got to take that a step further, because you are in a male dominated industry. I'm sure there were barriers placed in your way. Maybe not everybody was excited to see you apply for a job or come to work there or that sort of thing. How did you learn to overcome those types of things and deal with the men you were going to have to deal with if you were going to get to the places that you wanted to get to?
Yeah, that's a great question. My childhood was tough, and I think I gained a lot of strength from that. And it really, really, like, was deep in me, and I hardened up, and I was like, man, whatever I believe in life, I'm going to go for it, and I'm never going to let anybody hold me back. And I sometimes I find myself that I may be the one holding me back and then I have to reflect. But I knew in my heart and my strength, I was like, never, I'm never going to let anybody hold me back. And what I would do is I would learn ways, you know, clearly, you know, finding great mentors to help you. And I would find phenomenal mentors who understood the value of women, especially in the golf industry. And they would help guide me. They would help change my thought process behind something or how to communicate it. And when you find those mentors that appreciate and understand that value, your mindset completely changes. And there's honestly, it's almost like there's cones in the road and those cones are just like moved right out of the way. So, you know, anybody who can find a mentor that is, you know, really good at helping push the agenda and giving you that confidence is so important. And I've had so many of them. So that's helped me dramatically being in a male dominated industry.
Do you mind sharing who are some of the mentors that you went to? Who are some of the people that really helped you get to where you are?
Yeah. Jeff Smith, somebody recently that I've been able to speak to. I was at Lake Nona, Annika became a good friend of mine, and she also helped me. And Emma Stenson, which is Henrik Stenson's wife, she would help me a lot. And Lori Kane. So I had a lot of mentors at Lake Nona. And, you know, of course, strong, very strong women. And they made me run. It, don't run away from anything. You just go. I was very, you know, I was very lucky to have those individuals with the, you know, prestige and the knowledge that they have, to really push me and make sure that I didn't let anybody, or any type of situation hold me back and to stick to what I believed in and what was right. And, you know, again, do what I'm good at.
Jeff Smith is fantastic, by the way. One of my favorites. So good for you.
Oh, yes. He's awesome.
Yes, he is. Even just a couple more before I let you go, but let's talk about goals. Where would you like to go? Where in your journey are you trying to ultimately get to?
I'm going to be honest with you. I am so, so busy at Medina. It's so hard to think about sometimes, because I used to think, oh, I need to be at an academy. But to be honest with you, I want to become smarter in the golf industry. I want to know the ins and outs of golf swings, what's trending, what's not good. And I feel like my expertise behind that and the continuing education that I do, I think it's going to kind of place me somewhere where, you know, in the future, I would love to be, you know, somewhere on the East Coast again one day. But right now, I'm building up a huge clientele at Medina, and we're doing phenomenal. We have, you know, 130 kids, 8 and up in our juniors, and we have about 75 kids between 4 and 7 that I coach during the summer times, and then our regular members. But I mean, right now I'm just thriving and loving where I am. And I haven't really looked too much into much of the future, except more of becoming more knowledgeable, because knowledge takes you places, and it can take you places that you never thought were probably possible. So I'm just trying to take in every opportunity to learn from the best, surround myself with the best. And, to be honest, I think those are where those opportunities start to show up in front of you that you never thought were there.
Let's switch gears a little bit, because I want to get you a thought. We're witnessing a historic run by Nelly Korda out on the LPGA Tour. 5 wins in a row, including a major last Sunday. What are your thoughts? How do you feel about what we're seeing from her?
I mean, I don't even know if she feels like she's in her body playing right now. Because that is incredible. Same thing with Scheffler. It's incredible. And what she's doing for this sport is just so awesome to see. I mean, work ethic is everything. That girl probably grinds like crazy, and she probably has such a great mentality of life and how to balance some things out. And she's on a roll. And again, I don't even know if she feels like she's in her own body when she's playing, because she's lights out. It's just incredible to watch. It's incredible for anybody to watch. And I use her a lot for videos, and she's just so at ease and peace. It's just kind of like an angelic move that she just makes in her golf swing. And when you can swing like that repeatedly, you can be successful repeatedly. And that's what I see, is a repeat swing, repeat scores, repeat wins.
Eva, I got to get a playing lesson from you before I let you go. And for those of us that struggle with the in-between pitch shot, that 40 to 60 yard range, walk us through club selection, ball position, setup, that we can go out there and try to execute that shot successfully the majority of the time.
Yeah, well, the number one thing you don't want to do is not move your body. We want to make sure we're always athletically letting our body move. And it's talked about a lot nowadays, you know, let your lower body rotate, let your chest rotate. When you're hitting anywhere but from 40 to 60 yards, number one, know your distances on your wedges. A lot of people, when I put them on TrackMan, they're like, oh, I hit this club this. 90% of them are incorrect. The best players know their distances. They know their carry and probably how much they're going to roll it out depending on the shot shape they're putting on it. So number one, figure out your distances. Number two, I love my 54 degree wedge. If you have a 56 degree wedge, you can hit low, mid, high shots with that. You finish, you could think to yourself, oh, I want something to be a little lower. I always like to tell people, kind of do it like three ways. I know Tiger back in the day, he always talked about how he did a drill called nine, and it was, you know, low trajectory, mid trajectory, high trajectory, and it was low fade, mid fade, high fade, center, and then draws. What I do with my students is I have them hit low, mid, high with their wedges. So low, I would say you could grab a pitching wedge. You could do an 8-iron, 9-iron if you want, but I like pitching wedges. I like to feel a little bit of that pop off the face. So you could take the club head back, basically knee height to knee height would be the low shot. You could do hip height to hip height. That would be medium. And then high could be like a sternum to sternum. So basically whatever you do going back, you're going to mirror going through in the follow through. However, you have to make sure you move your body. I see and hear so many people say, oh, I didn't keep my head down. And when I show them on video, their head is so far down, that club has already finished before their head looked up at the target. So get your head moving through your target so you can actually let your body move. Because if not, your lower body, your leg usually stays down in the ground, your arms take over, and that's where a lot of people either dip into the shot and they chunk it, or they end up scolding it because they decided to use their hands so much. So I think watching Rory is a great example with his chip shot. He does a phenomenal job. Less is more. The more you use your hands, more you use your wrists, the more error you have, that's going to happen. The more you move your body as almost a one piece movement, going back and through mirroring the same positions, you'll gain a little more consistency, and ultimately we want repeatability. So if you can repeat your movement more as a whole piece, that's more consistent than you moving your hand at this angle, this speed, your arms bending here, your leg has stopped here, your head position hasn't moved, your chest is still looking down. There's too much happening, and that's going to lead to errors. So grab a more forgiving club. Make sure you know your distances with different types of launches you like. Always figure out, do you like a high ball, mid ball, or a low trajectory ball? If you don't know what ball you like, you're going to struggle out on the golf course. So figure out what you like to see going towards the green and move more as one piece rather than 30.
Sounds like solid advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's going to help a lot of people out. Eva, before
Absolutely.
I let you go, let us know, how can we stay up to date with all the great things you're out there doing, whether we're following you online or we're doing it on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me at EvaRogers_golf, or I'm, you know, pretty active on LinkedIn as well. So anything or anybody can reach out. They have your information. They can find my information through that.
Well, Eva, I can't thank you enough for coming back for a third time and being a part of the show. Always learn a lot and always gain an even greater sense of what a fantastic instructor you are and the great things that you're doing inside of our game, becoming a leader, doing the great things in junior golf, and then also for the members there out at Medina. You're a treasure, and I can't thank you enough for being a part of this week's show.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's a pleasure.
Take care, Eva. All the best in your family. I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. That is the great Eva Rogers, folks. And again, EvaRogers_golf is where you're going to be able to follow her out there on social media and on Instagram. Check her out and make sure you're following her on there because she is doing so many wonderful things inside of our game. You want to talk about somebody growing the game. I mean, you look at the junior players that she has, they all gravitate to her because she makes the game so much fun. Again, straight shooter with your parents. Like, look, this is a kid. And I think that's part of the thing that we are missing in junior golf is letting kids be kids. Us as parents, we want to throw our level of expectation on there. And then I always get a kick out of the parent that thinks that they know more than the instructor. Like, no, they should do this. No, they should do that. I mean, let the instructor instruct, but let the kids be kids and let them learn and have fun. And don't put your level of expectation on them because you know they're watching us, right? If you get them out there, whether they're playing, you know, just with their friends out on the course, or they start to play in AJGA events and that sort of thing. When they hit a shot, they're looking at us to make sure that we are not down on them. Let them play. Let them have fun, whatever they're doing. And encourage your kids and kind of stay out of the way and just encourage them and let them have fun inside the game. That's how we can help grow the game. And then people like Eva are coming along and making it fun and making it a game that they want to come back and learn. We got to keep them, right? Part of the problem is in this TikTok world, kids have so many other distractions and social media for themselves and video games and all those sort of things that are sort of pulling them in one direction. We want to keep them when we get them out there playing. And someone like Eva is one of the great people that's out there doing that in lots of different creative ways and the things that she talked about during the course of the conversation. Whatever it is in competition that she's doing to get the kids to want to beat her, or beat the other kids, or, you know, win a prize or win a tchotchke, whatever it is. But we need more people like Eva in our game. It's so great to be able to have her on the show again tonight for a third time. And we'll try to stay close and have her come back on the show again soon. Being out there in Medina is a wonderful thing, too. What a great golf course for her to be out there playing on, teaching on, and then interacting with those great members. So kudos to her. We'll get her back on the show again soon. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks to four great guests for joining me this week. Tom Patrick, Larry Rinker, Kip Henley, and Eva Rogers. Fantastic. I hope you enjoyed them as much as I did. Scheduled to join me next week are Champions Tour Pro Clark Dennis will be back, Erie Sports Hall of Famer and 1997 Ryder Cup assistant captain Dennis Satisher will make his next On the Tee debut. And shout out to Bill Mallon for getting me hooked up with Dennis. Really looking forward to having him as part of the show. Former Detroit Lions and Dallas Cowboys Pro Bowl kicker Eddie Murray will be joining me. And Eddie's a fantastic golfer. Had him over on our show on Thursday Night Tailgate for several years. Really looking forward to talking a little bit of golf with Eddie. He'll be here. As will PGA professional turned wonderful artist Chandler Withington. Chandler's fantastic. Looking forward to having him back as part of the show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. Quick reminder that you can find the show available as a podcast just about anywhere you get your podcast content. In particular, we're out there on the Pittsburgh Tribune Review site. Just go to triblive.com and click on sports, and you're going to find the most recent episode right there on the homepage of the sports section. If you go on to click podcasts, you'll be able to listen to any of the episodes from this season's shows. You can also find the show available on great sites like Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audioboom, and Player.fm. And as I always say, thanks to the folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of the recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But as always, most of all, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.